When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Jorge Army and fellow music fans, I'm Kayla.
And I'm Bethany, and we're the hosts of Standing BTS from the Consequence Podcast Network. We're a bi-weekly show that covers the impact and legacy of K-pop group BTS.
We mix the perfect blend of research and fangirl as we take a deep dive into lyrics during album reviews, theorize over music videos, and keep up with their current events.
No BTS topic is off limits. We welcome everyone into the conversation, whether you're a casual fan, committed ARMY, or someone who's just curious about one of the biggest music groups in the world.
Come chat with us every other Thursday with a new episode wherever podcasts are found.
Welcome to the In Defense of Ska podcast.
There's a lot of like, okay, well, you like ska named three bands that aren't the Boss Tones.
I'm your host, Aaron Carnes, music journalist and author of the book In Defense of Ska.
And I'm your co-host, Adam Davis, veteran ska musician from the bands Omnigon and Link 8.
On our show, we aim to push back on the mainstream's negative perception of ska music.
There are so many great untold stories throughout the history of ska. The show features interviews with everyone from the Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to Fishbone, Fall Out Boy singer Patrick Stump, and the Police drummer Stuart Copeland. Join us on In Defense of Ska from the Consequence Podcast Network.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
Doing my volume here. There we go.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Hey, and welcome to another edition of Kyle Meredith With. It's the interview series presented by WFPK at WFPK.org, Consequence, and the Consequence Podcast Network. Thanks for making your way here for checking out the episode. Hit that subscribe button if you're not already. That way you get three new episodes just like this one sent your way every single week. It's a new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab us at Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. Subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And don't forget to give the series a rating and leave a review if you feel so inspired as well. We've had some great guests stop by lately, including Adele, Hank Azaria. You know him as one of the many voices on The Simpsons and his many film roles through the years. He now has a Bruce Springsteen tribute band. We also talked with the stars from Citadel Diana and Citadel Honey Bunny. Suzanne Vega was here, Billy Corgan of the Smashing Pumpkins, Sting, Kate Siegel, famous of The Haunting of Hill House, Midnight Mass, and so many Mike Flanagan films. We also talked with Kelsey Asbel and Finn Wittrock of Don't Move, that's now playing on Netflix. John Cleese of Monty Python was here, Black Francis from the Pixies, the cast of Shrinking on Apple TV+, Tony Hale from Veep and Arrested Development, Depeche Mode, Jerry Cantrell of Alice in Chains. Just an example of what you get when you subscribe to the Kyle Meredith With podcast. That's me, Kyle Meredith. Today, one of my favorite guests to have on, Susanna Hoffs of the Bangles, is back. She has unearthed a gem. There was an album she recorded back in the late 90s that just never got released, and she finally dug it out, called it The Lost Record. And that's what we're going to be talking about. She'll reflect on creating music with members of the Tuesday Night Music Club. You remember them from the Sheryl Crow album. And the vibrant, collaborative energy that shaped this whole collection. Susanna's going to share stories about tracks like Under a Cloud and Who Will She Be, as well as her surprise at finding her handwritten cassette of Prince's Manic Monday with a mysterious second track, Jealous Girl, which Prince originally intended for the Bangles, but was never recorded by the band. She'll also touch on her journey into writing novels, her evolving archive of unreleased music, and hints that more of these hidden gems might surface in the future. So let's get into it and discuss The Lost Record. It's Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs.
Hi, Kyle.
So I don't know how to say this. You're back with an album, but it's an album that you've had for like 25 years in your back pocket. It's called The Lost Record.
I know.
It's not new music, but it's new to us music.
Yeah.
What's the story on this? But I don't know how many of these you got sitting around, but what an incredible album.
Thank you.
Especially to have never released.
I know. Well, we have to rewind the tape to 1999, but even further back. I was invited to work with, back about 1995, with many of the players who had been involved with Sheryl Crow's The Tuesday Night Music Club. So there was a period of time where I was recording up at David Cate's house. He was one of the producers, and Jim Keltner was playing drums. You know, it was kind of a who's who of their friends. I remember Linda Perry came and sang on something. We were just up there in this sort of think tank mode. Jim Scott, amazing producer, was producing. One day I picked up the phone because it was ringing and I thought no one's answering. And I pick it up and it's like George Harrison on the line saying, is Jim Keltner there? I can't do the accent. And I was like, yes, hold on, please. I didn't like fangirl out, but like that was the kind of stuff that was happening. It was, and one day Joni came, Joni Mitchell, and I have a little recording of David Bearwald, me and Joni singing Love Potion number 9. Somebody taped it, maybe me, I don't know. I ended up with like a little recording of it. But it was like a very, it was a very interesting time to be around all these creative people who just wanted to hang out at this house and make music. But somewhere along the lines, things stalled out. And then we cut to getting to The Lost Record, 1999. So where it's like the 90s was a really interesting era, you know, having experienced the 80s with the Bangles, it had a whole different flavor. I think Nirvana really made an impact on me. I know the kind of quote unquote grunge sound, being able to be, having come from like this, you know, Columbia Records recording artists, the Bangles, you know, having producers in there that we loved, but like, it was just the feeling of being part of Columbia Records and making those three records in the 80s, along with Hazy Shade of Winter, which was on that soundtrack. But we did a lot of music and we were all ready to have a break. And so here's the 90s with its 90s zeitgeist. And I don't know, this music was born out of all of that. It was a very much, even though it wasn't recorded until 99, I just had my second kid. There was a garage to record in because the garage is where the Bangles met and formed, my family's garage back then. The garage has always factored very large. It's been large in my life, having lived in my parents' garage after, you know, after college. And so it was, seemed perfectly fine to me to hang out with, you know, Bill Bottrell and Dan Schwartz in my garage and sit around and write some songs. And that's what happened. And then it grew from the three of us, Bill Bottrell and Dan and me, to, hey, inviting some of their other creative friends and collaborating and coming up with this batch of songs. But then, and I still can't remember what happened, but the whole thing sort of stopped. I know that the Bangles wanted to reform at one point, and I sort of parked all of that music. That's probably what it was. And even songs like Under a Cloud, there's a Bangles version of it. But, you know, I've always had a place in my heart for these demos. Like, to me, demos are the most raw, real, right up at the surface that you can ever get. It's that first iteration of something where you don't, and to me, they're finished productions.
Nothing about this sounds like a demo to me.
No.
Like, this sounds like an album. And that's like the a few of the things you mentioned. When I saw Bill Bottrell's name on there and that crew and Bearwald, I was like, oh, it's the Tuesday Night Music Club. That's it.
Yeah. You know?
Like, and they have such a sound. But it's so interesting to me hearing you talk about it like this, that it all just kind of folds in on itself because, you know, when we're making songs, we're so close to them. I think a lot of times we don't hear what maybe other people might hear, you know,
It's so subjective. Art is subjective.
Yeah. And for like, as soon as I heard songs on here, I thought, my God, you were sitting on a hit record the entire time. Now I know time and place means a lot, you know, like the environment of 99 and what it would have sounded like at the time. Although I'm thinking like, you know, things were getting heavier and going poppier in the 2000s, but pop rock was still riding a nice wave with like Semisonic and Sugar Ray and the Wallflowers and all that stuff. You know, it's like this record, who knows, right? But it could have survived on its own. Like this.
Well,
is such
it's
a good
here.
Record.
It finally is here. It did survive.
Well, I guess that's true. It did.
Yeah, it actually did. And the reason I called it the lost record was because these recordings were very near and dear to my heart. And yeah, it just was waiting for its moment. And I have to thank Carla Parisi, my incredible manager, for helping, you know, team up with me on like finding a way to like finally, well, to just get it out into the world, to just let it fly.
Yeah.
So
the bird has flown.
The bird has flown. Yeah.
We'll get to that later on in the
episode. Yeah.
And we'll be right back right after.
Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
This. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs.
Yeah, Under a Cloud. Of course, I knew the Bengals version, which would come later on. I want to say 2011 or something like that. But
something like that.
Yeah. And what? Grateful and
yeah,
I Will Take Care of You.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But these are the versions that are nearest and dearest to my heart, really, you know.
And I love this version of Under a Cloud. Like, I was also thinking, like, 99 would have been around, you know, the Ming-T era, you know, Austin Powers. And that I can hear, so I don't know if that's purposeful, if that's just what I want to hear, but I can hear that's,
oh,
for 60s influence
cool.
has always been in your stuff, you know, but
always.
It's definitely obvious in Under a Cloud.
Oh, completely, yeah. And I just like that there was a kind of, yeah, it really did capture how I was feeling. That's what songs are for. They're like, a, you know, an expression of something that needs to be expressed. And I think that that's why all of these songs were so personal. And for whatever reason, that group of people in that garage, in that moment of vulnerability, having this like newborn and having like a toddler and a newborn, and Jay's career starting to take off and me being kind of like alone in with the children and like, of course, wanting to be able to be musical at that time as well. And finding a way to, even if it was like walking over to the garage a few steps from the back door of the house, you know, and meeting up with a cast of characters who were all talented and scrappy and excited to work, you know, it's great.
Do you remember writing Under a Cloud?
I do. I think we were in the garage when we did it. And I get a little bit confused a little bit in the timeline because I think that was written before the day, the Bear. See, there was this whole period where I was sort of semi-working with, I was Jim Keltner. It was the same people, but it was just a different location. I think these were all, the songs on the Lost record were all done in the garage. Yeah. From that discrete period of months, you know, it was very concentrated. Yeah.
And what does that mean? Like you guys to get in there and just jam it out? Or, I mean, are you writing off on your own and then bringing them in to the group?
No, it was always the team. No, we were doing it together on the spot. It was really kind of a fun exercise, you know? It's like improv artists, you know, they have their whole way that they create in before your eyes and you don't know what's going to happen. It felt like improv. It really did. I've never thought about that. But I think co-writing is a form of improv. I've just put that together.
Well, I mean, you're taking nothing exists, and then hopefully by the end of whatever session, there it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's strange for me because I've most of my life, apart from writing novels now, I always was someone who collaborated. I always had someone in the early days of the Bangles. It was me and Vicky. We'd get together in the garage of that house, my childhood house, and we write in there, you know, and we would, the back and forth was so fun. But I was just working on my next novel yesterday, and it, there is something, why? I mean, it's all forms of art and storytelling. Songs are about our storytelling, and creating a song is an exercise in storytelling, but it just feels so, it's strange. I always have leaned towards, in music, collaborating. I just like that back and forth.
The conversation.
Yeah, the conversation. Yeah. And yet I'm able to converse with my characters. It's such a strange thing. Yeah, it's fun, but I'm grateful to have these jobs.
Yeah, well,
they're good jobs.
I'll tell you the other song that I am absolutely obsessed with is Who Will She Be?
Oh, I love that one. Because that was the question.
Well, okay. Now that, I mean, it does make sense. You know, when you get a song, whether you've written it or whatever, and you're like, this has got to be another song. This has got to be, it's got to be a cover, or it's got to be an answer song or something like that. And I said, and I didn't have, I got your, the liners afterwards, and I was able to look it up, and I was like, no, this is the song she wrote. Like it sounded immediately classic in a way that I thought I'd been listening to that song all of my life, if
my
that makes
gosh,
sense.
Yeah. Well, I think that was the question I was asking myself, you know, at that time. It was so like spot on, but that's what you want, you know?
As you said, it was an interesting point. It's an interesting point of anybody's career who's gone through similar things, like you were saying earlier, to have a big success that's so, you know, intertwined with a decade, as it happens with a lot of artists. And then suddenly you're in the next decade and you've had your own successes in there. But it is that question for any artist goes through is like, what's going to happen now? How do I continue this? Like, what a moment to be in, I guess.
Yeah, I think so. I probably, when I reflect back, I was probably questioning. But at the same time, there was always this imperative to make more art, you know, to keep writing in some form, to connect with other people. Other humans, because it's the thing. It's like why I am obsessed with listening now. I'm doing a lot of audiobook listening to, as opposed to like buying a book and reading it that way, because I like to be read to, but also I can, you know, go on a walk and do it, or drive in my car and, you know, continue the story. But I think that stories in art connect us. And I think that the fact that we can connect with each other as human beings and have empathy for each other and through art is so important, so critical, you know, in this world. Because, I mean, we've got to, yeah, be our best selves whenever possible. And something about how art has affected me through the course of my life is I'm just so grateful that I was exposed to it, that I got to hear my mom turning on the radio in the car in the 60s. And that made me want to sing. It made me want to sing. And it made me feel like life was richer. It just enriched everything.
And the way you do it, even as you were saying, through the collaboration and the conversations, you know, musically.
Yeah.
Life on the Inside, of course, finds you with Charlotte and Jane from the Go-Go's. At any point, did you all look at each other and go, this is a super group? They're going to call this a super group.
Well, you know, I love both. I love, and I'm close with Belinda too. I, when the Go-Go's happened, they were such an inspiration. I know I made my handmade flyers advertising myself to find bandmates and left them at the Whiskey where the Go-Go's were playing. And somebody kept throwing them in the trash and I kept pulling them out. It was a lost cause there, but I was not going to be, I was undaunted. I advertised myself in the Recycler, and that's how I met Vicki Peterson. And then the rest is like that history. But yeah, I think that, well, maybe I veered off your question. specifically?
I mean, I was just really having fun because there you are recording, you know, when fans hear, you know, that you have two, you know, major players in two groups, it's like you're a super, you're automatically a super group.
Yeah. So I did a lot of writing with Charlotte and Jane. I did. There was a period. There's, oh my God, it's on all on cassette, if you can imagine, just sets the time for us. But there's stuff that I wrote with them that I haven't, I mean, right this in this moment, you bringing it up makes me want to go back through the cassettes and see what's there. There was a lot of collaborating going on. It was a really rich mix of people, like working with the people from the Tuesday Night Music Club and then working with Charlotte and Jane, you know, two great songwriters. And I've collaborated with Belinda. I did a show at Larga. I performed with Belinda too. So she and I have sung together. Yeah, it's great.
I love that. So I was going to say the cassettes, because you earlier this year posted that you held up the cassette with Manic Monday on there. And of course, everybody noticed that second line under it where it said Jealous Girl.
I know. Like, so where is that song?
Did you all actually record it? So Prince released it on the Sign of the Times box set.
Oh, I need to find that so I could find it. No, we didn't record Jealous Girl. We just recorded Manic. But I never actually heard that song, because weirdly, when we tried to find it on the tape, it wasn't on there. So I don't know.
Interesting.
Or maybe something happened to the tape.
He did Vanity. Apparently, I haven't heard. This is from reading. You know, Vanity had done a version that never got released, and then Prince eventually, or Prince's Camp, released it on the Sign of the Time box set that came out like.
I'm gonna find that. I've always wondered, because it was kind of, it was kind of a mystery.
See, now you can hear that. Finally, do the version that should have always been done.
Yeah, that's right. That would be cool. Yeah, I'm going to make a note to myself. So it's on the box set?
Yeah, you can find it on Spotify. It's on there.
Oh my God, I'll find it.
And we'll be right back right after this. Welcome back. It's Kyle Meredith with Susanna Hoffs.
We mentioned jokingly The Bird Has Flown, which of course was your first book. And there was the news that it was being developed into a film. Is that still in process?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, Universal Pictures optioned the book, and I've written a second draft of the screenplay. So we'll, fingers crossed, we'll see what happens with that.
That's what I was wondering, like, how much time now, something that you wrote now, you know, a couple of years ago, is still, like, you're still working on that.
Yeah.
And
another book, yeah. I've always had my head in a novel, and I love the freedom of just going off into my imagination and putting words in people's mouths and creating characters who are of every kind of personality type. It's just so much fun. I don't know. It doesn't even feel that hard when you're doing it. It is hard. It's hard work to write a novel. It takes years, but it is, I don't know why. Jay used to come in when I would be writing the first book, and he's just like, who has fun doing this? Why are you giggling? Because I would just have fun with it. I don't know. It's a late in life new career.
I love that. Now, writing a book, because the time it takes, does that give you the opportunity, as we're seeing here, to kind of go back to the vaults? And I say that, like, instead of maybe recording a new album, suddenly you're like, well, I've got the time to look, you know, through my drawers instead of going into the studio.
Well, you know, there is, I have such an archive. Honestly, you've tapped into like the elephant in the room. I have kept a careful archive with fantastic letters from people from the 80s, like Molly Ringwald and I were friends and we're still friends, but like, you know, postcards from her and letters between us. It's such a massive archive that I just like, because I'm in my 60s now, that's what happens. It builds over time. I just haven't had a chance to like really dig deep into it, you know, because I'm always like, oh God, I want to work on my new novel, or I want to record this song, or I'm writing with this person. So it's really just finding the time. But someday, some of that stuff I'll start sharing. Demos and things, you know.
I can't wait to hear it. I mean, like, if this is the teaser, if this lost record is the teaser, like,
yeah. God, I'm so happy that you're enjoying it. You know, I'm so glad it's no longer lost.
Because, you know, as a fan, you know, we're always interested in, you know, what was left behind, right? Like, that's always the thing.
Yeah.
Like, we love hearing the Beatles talking in the studio, whatever it is, you know,
yeah.
and the lost B-sides and all that stuff. But the expectations are like, this is the stuff that did make it out, so it must not be as good. And then you hand something like this, and you're like, this is probably my favorite record that I'm listening to right now.
Oh, my God.
You know, so that's, I'm so happy this made it out there.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm so happy it made it out there. I'm, of course, going to look forward to whenever that novel arrives down the road, and a new record, hopefully, is in the future, or just a recorded version of a Princess Jealous Girl. I'll take whatever.
Oh my gosh. That sounds great.
Susanna, it's always a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time again.
Same. So great to see you. Till next time.
My thanks to Susanna. The Lost Record is out now. Thanks to you for checking out the episode. Again, please do hit that subscribe button before you get out of here so you can keep up with all the interviews just like this one. 3 a week, new one every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. You can grab a Spotify, Apple Podcast, NPR, WFPK.org, Consequence, YouTube for the video versions, or anywhere you get your podcast from. You can subscribe to Kyle Meredith With. And again, please do give the series a rating and leave a review while you're at it as well. After that, you can head over to WFPK.org, where I do a show Monday through Friday starting at 6 p.m. Eastern. You get 4 hours of classics from the 80s and 90s. You get the best in new music. There are bonus interviews, lots of music news as well. One of my recent shows featured some classics and favorites from John Prine, Emmylou Harris, Joan Baez, T-Rex, Aerosmith, The Selector, The Backbeat Band, Dinah Washington, Jesus and Mary Chain, Amy Mann, Iron and Wine, The Yeah Yeah Yeahs, J.J. Wild, Ike and Tina Turner, Salt and Peppa, and my interview with Vernon Reed of Living Color. That's what you can hear when you tune in weeknights starting at 6 p.m. Eastern at WFPK.org. Consequence has your music and film news. You can also find me on any of the social media sites. The address is always the same. It's at Kyle Meredith. I do hope you like and follow along. And that does it for another edition. I'm Kyle Meredith. I'll see you next time.
Consequence Podcast Network.
And your response to the record is just blowing my mind.
It's easy to hear your favorite artist on WFPK from wherever you are. Listen on your smart speaker, live stream from our website at WFPK.org from Louisville Public Media.
There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always on the verge of death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone. Up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.